Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's Thursday, April 9th, 2026, episode 134, if you're keeping count. On today's show, we're talking about the Rivian R2 actually beating the Model Y in range, but also efficiency. Rimac is now going to make battery packs for BMW, and Alpitronic's megawatt charger arrives in the US. And of course, much, 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 much more. I am your host, Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily podcast. Joining us today is the scintillating Mr. Tom Mologany, host of the YouTube channel State of Charge and the premier EV charging news site, evchargingstations.com. We can see on screen Kyle Connor joining us today from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Outer Spec Studios. And we have Dominic Yoni, longtime EV journalist and host of YouTube's Drive Electric with Dominic. Where are you in the world at the moment, Dominic? I always forget.
I am in Krabi in Thailand.
You have told me that before. All right. Thank you. Here we go.
Grizzly. At Grizzly, we believe charging your electric vehicle should be simple, reliable, and affordable. That's why we design, engineer, and build our chargers in Canada, ensuring top-tier quality and performance. Powered by United Chargers, every Grizzly model is crafted in-house, built to withstand extreme conditions, and tested for reliability. Recognized by leading publications for its performance and value, Grizzly delivers both durability and intelligence with heavy-duty aluminum enclosures, premium output cables, and smart charging features like scheduling, usage tracking, and OCPP compatibility with multiple charging apps. Grizzly. Simple. Reliable. Affordable. Built for every climate, every EV, everywhere you go. Visit grizzly.com to learn more.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Or good afternoon, or good evening. We're all on different time zones. Anyway, Tom, you've made it home. Now, as many of our viewers and listeners know, Tom has a series called Recharge Rescue. So Tom steps in and fixes an EV owner's charging system typically after it fails. Proper video coming soon. Tom, you had a big old road trip to get back in time to record the show. Can you give us an outline of what you were doing?
Yeah, super. Just made it back home, actually. In the last 20 hours, I drove almost 600 miles, slept for about 5 hours, and recorded for 5 hours. So it's been a hectic day for me. I had to drive down to Maryland, and there was a person who has he actually has four different EVs. This is an OG EV guy. He's been driving EVs since 2012 or 2013. He's owned 10 different electric vehicles, got Tesla Powerwalls at the house, solar. Brian's all in on EVs. And this is what I arrived. I don't want to spill it in my coffee. This is what his garage looked like.
Wow. And, that is a melted mess of something.
Here's what's left of the NEMA 1450 outlet. So typical NEMA 1450, but it wasn't just that. There were other problems too. The master electrician that did the job a couple of years ago piggybacked off a dryer circuit where there was a 8-gauge Romex wire in the line. And so that contributed. You should have, if you're going to use the Romex on a NEMA 1450, it should be 6-gauge. So the wire was undersized. It was a typical NEMA 1450 outlet, one of the cheap ones. And you know, it appears as though one of the wires might have even came off before it melted. So there was all type of problem. Wasn't torqued properly. In any event, he also, because he has four EVs, He installed another NEMA 1450 a few years ago. It was on the other side of the garage. There was no signs of wear on that one, but I couldn't just go and fix this one and leave him with another NEMA 1450. He originally said, just swap it out with a good EV rated one, but it had 8-gauge Romex wire feed. It's just not a good, I didn't feel right leaving. So I got Emporia to give me 2 Emporia Pros. I showed up with those and we completely ripped everything out back to the panel, ran, number 6 wire in MC metal clad, and got him up and running today. And he's very happy man. Now he's got a very safe installation and shouldn't have any problems. This one, you know, I mean, I know I say this a lot when I do these, but this one could have took his house down. This one, even the wood studs on inside the wall were all charred next to the outlet. So he's lucky it put itself out and he didn't have a real serious problem. It's going to happen, guys. We're going to see it on the news. You know, EV charger burns house down. You know, it's so many of these failures sooner or later. We're gonna get it to really combust and not be put out. So I hope it doesn't happen. But man, there's thousands of these out there just waiting to fail. So we got one in the books, and I should have the video out in a few days.
Nice. All right, new recharge rescue coming.
So it was always a good reminder, like that. You know, there's some maintenance involved in your home charging situation with your setup. You know. Maybe there should be like a more like official schedule of, you know, how often you should have someone check, you know, your connections in your fuse box or on your charger or whatever.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think eventually we'll probably move to EV rated circuit breakers that are even more robust than the ones we're using now. Those don't seem to be a major point of failure, but I've seen a few of them fail because of the load that they're under. But the outlets, at bare minimum, if any, you know, who's ever out there, if you do use an NEMA 1450, please make sure it's not one of the cheap ones. Just it doesn't cost much. Just buy a new one, buy an EV rated one, and have an electrician swap it out. At the very least, turn your circuit breaker up, open it up, take a look inside, make sure the connections are torqued properly and everything. Because, you know, I know everybody wants to save money, but this is a real, like, you could die from this. This isn't just a matter of, you know, oh, you might have a problem. So this is a huge problem, and it'll hurt the whole EV industry if people's homes start burning down. And now the thing is, the first few years of this new EV, you know, evolution, we didn't see this too much because the outlets were new. People didn't have as big of batteries as we're getting now in the cars, where the continuous draw is even longer. And now that these outlets are starting to be 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, now they're really worn down. So I think we're going to see an accelerated number of problems in the coming years. And people, I think it's just awareness. And that's what the whole Recharge Rescue series is about, guys. Like, you know, these are expensive for me to put on. I pay for everything on the house. I mean, I lose money on my videos when I do these. I mean, it's good for me, exposure and long-term, but like each one of these Recharge Rescue videos ends up costing me like $5,000 or $6,000. So, you know, I don't make that in ad revenue. They don't get that many views, but in any event, it's a public awareness campaign as much as it's anything.
Yeah, there's got to be a reality TV network. Discovery, you should give Tom a call or someone. This is definitely it's a human story behind it as well. Look, I'll write the pitch for you. I used to work in media. I'll write the pitch. And it's a human story. We just need to find, you know, people that'll cry on camera or something. But let's not go down that road. But, you know, reality TV, and they'll pay for it. No, let's get it. Might be a bit of a charging episode, this one, because there's been... there was a big charging show in Vegas, which we've probably not gone into a huge amount, actually. The EV Charging Summit and Expo. For our viewers, rather than our listeners, Tom's on screen right now talking to Alpatronic, but he also talked to Kempower and more as well. Those videos are up on State of Charge. Kyle, you also have an Alpatronic video out because their 1,000 EV charger is... in the ground. Well, at least in the ground, or at least on a sled at their headquarters. So they've come to Europe first. They said in your, I think your video or Tom's video, they've tended to do Europe first and then go to the US. So these are, well, the HYC-1000s, which does rather imply that it will be a 1,000 kilowatt. Is it quite that simple, Kyle? You've taken your Tesla Model S and charged on it. Tell us all about these units.
Well, the Model S was clearly the limitation during the charging session. It just can't accept much more power than 250 kilowatts. And this was in no way, I brought my Model S there because I had to get there somehow. But I didn't focus on the charging session because it doesn't matter. It would charge the same on a 400 versus one of these. I was lucky enough to go down there. Alpitronic's headquarters is in North Carolina, same with Out of Spec. So I took the roughly just over 3 hour drive one way down there. It was perfect. It was a nice day for a cruise. Went down to Charlotte and got to check out this unit. I was with my colleague Walter and we dissected it. We went into their laboratories. We met with a bunch of people from Alpitronic and got to experience it. And this really is a megawatt charger. It can dispense 1,000 kilowatts to a vehicle or a semi-truck. They'll have a MCS dispenser version. They'll have a high-power NACS version for some of the high-power AMG cars that are coming. Those are kind of the first close to megawatt charging vehicles that will be sold to consumers. We've seen it with AMG GTXX and their demonstrations. That's they're not doing that just for fun. Like that's actually coming down the pipeline, which is crazy that we're going to be seeing that much crazy charging power. And Mercedes really seems to be, they don't have anything on the road right now that's that insane. The CLA is their best charging vehicle at the moment. But we'll see some really cool stuff. And really, at the end of the day, this is a new type of charging situation where it's no longer an all-in-one unit for Alpitronic. This is a split or a distributed system where they're able to offload their charging AC to DC rectification offline. Then they can put a bunch of dispensers around, and that is really the benefit.
Yeah, yeah. Tom, you also spoke to Alpitronic, their president of the Americas, Mike Duclef, at the Vegas show. You guys talked a little bit more about this change of philosophy. What's the crossover point in terms of Ioniq is getting a lot of attention at the minute, rightly so, because Ioniq is doing really good things. What's the crossover point in terms of do we put in a bunch of 400s or this new way of? In my mind, I call it the Kempower way of doing it, only because I think they got a lot of publicity for doing it with a dispenser, but others have obviously by having the cabinets and the dispensers and the Tesla model. What's the crossover? What are we going to see these in the ground or still 400s or what?
Yeah, well, I asked Mike that specific question, and he still said that the HYC-400s are still going to be the backbone of the company. They're still going to be probably the highest volume seller that they sell to their partners. But he did say that five stalls is the break-even point where this system starts to become less expensive than the HYC-400s. So, you can't get the companies to give you a price. Like if you say, well, how much does this cost? Because the price is always highly dependent on the partner, on how many they're going to buy, who it is. So, I knew I couldn't get them to give me a price. And that's why I wanted to know, why would somebody get one of these? At what point does it make financial sense? And he said five charging bays. Once you get that, this becomes price competitive. And most of his partners now have at least five charging bays. So it would seem that we might start seeing these with some of the people that are buying these. Ioniq uses Alpies. Walmart uses Alpies. We know Electrify America has been testing them. When I was down in their center of excellence, they had them in their shop, doing in-house testing. They already have two locations with them also. So, those are three big names right there that we could see this distributed power system in the ground some point in later 2026 on, you know, any one of those networks.
I guess to Tom's point on that, there are many high-powered DC fast charging distributed systems that you can go out and buy. And there are many that will give more power or XYZ. Like, each one has their own unique selling features to them. I'm sure this will not be the cheapest. I'm sure it won't be the most expensive. But at the end of the day, like Tom is saying, Alpitronic has insane market penetration with these CPOs, where, like, we know these will be everywhere. You know, if you look 1 year ago to today, the number of HYC 400s or HIC 400s, it's just exploded. And there's so many more in the pipeline. Every time I go to IONNA, obviously we work very closely with them. They're here in North Carolina. They just have a room full of them. Like, great. There's just so many. So the reason I wanted to make a dedicated video on this hardware is because no matter what, they have the sales funnel to put these things all across the country. And, you know, they will be used for many different variety of reasons. One might be site design and layout benefits, power sharing benefits, you know, sort of if you are going to build out a 40 stall site, well, it really makes sense to have a distributed network where you don't have that much wasted conversion power on site. But at the end of the day, they also service automakers charging networks like Mercedes. They buy Alpitronic hardware, and Mercedes is launching crazy high charging power vehicles, and they need their equipment to in order to charge those vehicles. And we've seen Alpitronic have a really close relationship with BMW in the past. We know the new BMW iX takes 630 amps now. You know, right now they're limited to 600 amps. I would imagine these to maybe get a little bit more of a boost. I hope they do, so that they can actually charge those BMWs at full power. It would be great for Tesla vehicles as well. So, yeah, at the end of the day, I think we're going to just see them follow the market trends from especially the European automakers, since that's their HQs kind of embedded over there. And then we're going to see them everywhere in the U.S.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, to Kyle's point, they're a trusted brand, Alpitronic, at this point. You know, there are other manufacturers making similar equipment, but Alpitronic has that advantage that a lot of the major networks have already put their trust in them, and the units are doing pretty good in the field. You know, they're not perfect. I've encountered some problems with a couple of times charging on Alpitronics, but they do have a very good reliability record, and it doesn't hurt that you've got, you know, out of spec and state of charge talking about Alpitronic and batteries included all of the time. It seems like we seem to be singing their praise a lot. And, you know, the industry watches us, Kyle. It's true. You know, when I was out at the EV Charging Summit, you know, I was told more than once by big players in the industry that, you know, that they follow both of our channels religiously. So that helps, you know, that we're out there talking about these products quite frequently. And we'll talk about other products too, but it just seems that they're doing a lot of things really good, and they have interesting stories. So, you know, we end up putting them on our channels a lot. I mean, you guys had a video. Logan was out at the EV Charging Summit and also talked to Mike, you know, or to Alpitronic, right? And I think you talked to Kemp Power also. Kemp Power makes great equipment. I'm surprised they haven't had better market penetration in the U.S. so far. But, you know, I did talk to them about that, and they actually said, you know, they don't have the highly visible penetration like the Electrify Americas and the IONNAs and everything, but they're actually doing really good with fleet sales. They've got, I think, 1,600 installations in the country already, which is more than I realized they had. So they maybe they're going after a different type of market. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Kyle, can you fill us in? And when you do, Dom, can you just flick forward here from about maybe 4/5 of the way through of Kyle's video where they open up the cabinet? So for anyone watching this who is either kind of coming to EVs newer, needs a refresher or whatnot, can you explain why these units, these dispensers are so small, where all the heavy lifting is done? If Dom can show us the bit of the video where they open the doors up of the cabinet. And also, a little bit about the cables and what the pinch point is. Like, we hear things like 600 amps and then 1,000 volts. And like, what's the key number there for getting those really big charging speeds that are holding things back at the minute? Is it the char- is it the cables? Is it the cars? Is it what's the thing that this fixes?
This is not a magic bullet for fast charging. You're mostly vehicle limited, of course. The charging hardware, you're looking at it right now. Those are the silicon carbide stacks. They're the Gen 3 units or Gen 2. They're the newest of their silicon carbide, 125 kilowatts per stack, which means that this unit can shuffle power around at a rate of 62.5 kilowatts per car switching, because these 125s are split in two. So if you have a car that takes full power and it allots a lot of stacks to it, as it starts to slow down charging power as state of charge increases, once you reach those 62.5 kilowatt thresholds, it can then open up those stacks to then be distributed across the entire site. Or, of course, you can configure it to be an even force split or first come, first serve. There's many ways you can do it. So the central bit is what's doing all the charging power. Those stacks are what take up space. Let's just be clear. Those are really small stacks. That's pretty incredible, actually. So they really don't take up that much space considering the charging power of 125 kilowatts per stack that's going in there. That's pretty unbelievable. Those can then be distributed through a pretty complicated switching matrix out to a total of 8 vehicles. So right now you have 2 dispensers with 2 ports. This is a 4 vehicle charging setup. You can add 2 more of those posts and then charge up to 8 vehicles, because of course that's how many stacks that are in there. So you can allot it out that way. You can, of course, choose different dispensers. What you're looking at here in this configuration is probably going to become the most common, which is an oil-cooled 600 amp per cable continuous load. Potentially we'll see a little bit more boost in the future with an active cooling unit on each dispenser. And so you'll see actually some vents on the right side where that dispenser is. That's what's cooling the liquid that flows through the cable. And they have a NACS and CCS version. There's another version that you can spec, which is the megawatt charging system, the MCS. And I can't remember exactly how high it can go, but right now a megawatt with this configuration, you can actually stack 2 of these cabinets together and feed an even more connected site at some time in the future, which will be really cool. And that's basically the same size as this, a little bit bigger because it's got a little bit more cooling. And you can also spec an additional CCS handle to go along with MCS, so that if you have some trucks that are CCS, some trucks that are MCS, you can go back and forth. You can configure it any way. Then in the near future, there will be a smaller dispenser version with air-cooled cables without the obviously liquid cooling stuff in there. We haven't seen what that looks like. We don't know timeline, but it could be exciting. And the air-cooled cables seem to be totally fine for the sort of urban charging situation where they're 380 amps nominal, but can still boost to 600 amps. They sell the HIC 400 with that version. Even with that said, there is no car on sale today that actually ever gets those cables thermally limited enough to come off their 600 amp boost. So you're saving money, you're increasing cable thickness, but lower cost and less complexity, and it can still, you know, charge vehicles all the time. So I've seen like Apple Green spec those air-cooled cables, for example. They were working fine, more or less. So yeah, many different configurations, but what you're looking at here is a fairly simple on the surface look, but these new silicon carbide stacks, they told me, have twice the lifetime of the existing HYC 400s. And those already are incredibly reliable. So it's a lot of under the hood improvements for their new architecture.
Yeah. So we see the screen moves to the front, which it does on the Series 2 400s, but we won't get into that now, but they're going to a big widescreen. Mm-hmm. This little one on the front is touchscreen, and they've got the buttons, which they're kind of famous for those buttons. And it will show you all the nerd level details that some of us want to see. I guess a question a lot of people would ask, Kyle, is how does this compare to Tesla with their latest dispenser and their latest power cabinets?
Yeah, we're going to have to do a lot of comparisons tests. We're actually getting into the point where it's worth doing those comparisons. Tesla's units can output quite a bit more current, but that really only benefits Tesla vehicles. And they are fairly close. There are some differences when it comes to switching matrix, to AC to DC power conversion, and of course the fact that the Tesla units don't have a front-facing screen. They have that screen on the side. Both are going to be fantastic hardware. I've charged on the version 4 Tesla supercharging cabinet and dispenser already. They're starting to roll that out, and it'll be a really interesting thing to run an experiment. I hope we can do this, to look at the cost of installing. You know, all of these DC charging players are so cost sensitive. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to share it. Many of them sell through dealers, so there's a lot of shady discounts going on. When there's a lot of government money involved, there's a lot of reason to inflate pricing. I'm not here to say anyone's doing that. But it's like, if you think buying a car is sketchy, they at least tell you what the MSRP is. And here, you have no idea. It's a shot in the dark. So it's really not – it actually needs to change. The whole way people buy and install charging needs to be radically changed compared to what we are doing today. At the end of the day, Tesla has contracts where people aren't even allowed to talk about what they're paying for their superchargers. But I would love to do a out-in-the-open bid for a project, a highway charging site. What does it cost to have Alpi units, Tesla units, Eco Energetica, Chem Power, list goes on and on, whoever, you know, ABB, so on and so forth, have them actually bid and then share those numbers with the people. Obviously, they would never allow it to happen, but I hope we can find a way one day to actually do a cost comparison.
And the funny thing about that cost comparison, and I got into one of the commenters on my video, Kyle, recently, because they weren't happy that I didn't press Mike on how much the system cost. And I'm like, that's a fool's errand. You're not going to get it. And if I had one site like you're talking about, and I went out and got competitive bids, that number is nothing like what Ayana's number would be. If Ayana called up Mike and said, we want to put in 1,000 of these mega chargers in the next 2 years, it might be a third of what they would charge you to do a single site. So even that is kind of like, it would be nice to see, but it won't tell the whole story is what I'm saying. And before we jump off charging completely, I on the way down to Maryland, when I did the Recharge Rescue episode yesterday, I stopped at the northernmost Walmart EV charging site in the country. I can't believe it, but New Jersey got a Walmart charging site. There's only 31 open right now, maybe 32 by today. I'm not sure. But like Ayana, like last year was kind of Walmart's first year, and it took them a while to get the ball rolling, but it's starting to roll now. And they have many sites under, you know, construction and so forth. And now in the last 60 days, Walmart doubled its network. So the ball is starting to roll now. But if you notice, all their stations are in Texas and Arkansas, and they're all down south. There wasn't a single site north of Arkansas in the entire country until 2 days ago. One opened up in New Jersey, of all places. So I went a little bit out of my way to go down to Maryland to stop and charge there. So I'm going to put a little quick video hit on that. But Walmart's coming north, guys. So 2026, I think we're going to get a lot of expansion on the Walmart network.
Nice. Maybe some of those new chargers as well from Walmart. What do you think?
You know, Alpitronic is one of their vendors. They use Alpitronic and ABB chargers right now. So I don't know. I'm going to have the opportunity. I talk with them at great length at the EV Charging Summit. I'm going to have another kind of exclusive interview with them, perhaps within the next week. We're just setting up times and dates and everything. And I'm going to ask them everything that I can. I don't think they're going to be aggressive with the latest tech. They're a conservative company. The feeling I get, and I could be wrong, but the feeling I get is they're content with the HYC 400s and the ABB 400 kilowatt chargers, and you know that they're going to charge fast enough. And if they charge too fast, then their customers won't shop in the store. So, you know, I don't think they want a 10-minute charge. You know, but we'll see if we can find out more information when I chat with them.
Before we move off charging DOM. What are your thoughts on the actual hardware layout, DOM? Because, you know, Tesla are really good at, there is something in the ground that I park my car next to and I plug my car into it. Kemp Power, again, to give them a mention, I think are pretty good having a dispenser and maybe one or two cables on the front, but it's for a car. And then some of the HYC400s that we see, if they're adding CCS1 and NACS, and they each unit's going to serve two cars, there's four, looks kind of weird to a European viewer, there's four on the front, which looks really weird. What do you think is the optimal for, because obviously you've got to balance cost and things like that. I'm not writing the checks, I'm always a kind of a fan of having a parking space and a thing in the ground, and people are coming into EVs new all the time. They're like, right, you plug your car into that and it's yours. What do you think, Dom? Does it even matter?
I'm not quite even sure what you're asking me. It's like, okay, to be honest.
Two cables on one dispenser, two cars pull up to it. Like, you've got to put it between two parking spaces, right. Newbies coming into EVs thinking, oh, that one's being used already, so I've got to wait. I think it looks nice when you have like one charger, one dispenser per store, okay, like Tesla would do. Am I overthinking it? From your response, I'm blatantly overthinking it.
Maybe. I mean, sometimes it can be confusing if you have a few like some of the Walmart, Electrify America locations in Walmart, so you have to kind of go in sideways, and sometimes it can be, you know, if you're not really like looking at it exactly how it's laid out, like which side you pull into exactly. Like, plus, when I'm driving into these stations, I'm usually like in a car that's kind of new to me anyway. So I'm already, I don't even know which side the plug is on generally sometimes, depending on the car. But I think generally, yeah, people figure it out pretty quickly. I've never really seen any problems with that. Like on all the, Kyle, and all the long runs we've done, we've had like, you know, 30 different drivers on these long trips. I don't think anyone's really ever had a problem with figuring out which cable, you know. It's pretty.
Yeah. So it actually, the opposite happens where, Martin, what we have often with Electrify America is you'll have multiple cables for one parking space. And then, you know, someone will pull up next to you and think you can share. But those chargers are not capable of splitting charge. Mm-hmm. So I agree. I think one stall, one parking space, the way Tesla does it, I am with you. I also have had some issues where I've run to an Ionna station and like someone's trying to like end their charge, or they're like looking and I'm like, dude, I got to like plug in and like do stuff. And I'm trying to see what my charging is. And thankfully, plug and charge kind of solves a lot of that, because if you don't need the screen, then you're good. Hopefully the new Alpitronic Gen 2 screens, I haven't seen them yet, allow you to operate both sessions at the same time. That would be really, I think, a benefit. But ultimately, in a perfect world, which we don't live in, plug and charge would happen. The car would then get the data to tell you your pricing and everything you would need to know. And you never have to interact with the dispenser. That's how it mostly works with Tesla. When you start opening up to a million charging networks and all this, gets complicated, especially when you have to share one unit. And I've just had, what really bothers me the most is when you share one unit and it takes your charging power to the next guy, when they could just park at another station and you don't have to give up your charging power. When you have a split distributed architecture, the chances of that happening are much less, because you have kind of have a site conversion power and then it can go wherever it needs to go.
Hmm. All right, good stuff. Right, before we lose Tom, because he's been on the road for 24 hours, I want to get to the Rivian story and get Tom's input on this, because, well, as soon as the R2 gets in your hands, you're going to be doing some testing on that. So the EPA certification came out. Perhaps it didn't fully align with Rivian's timeline of announcing it. According to the government agency, the R2 performance running on 21-inch wheels has an average energy efficiency of 3.77 miles per kilowatt hour, or 26.5 kilowatt hours per 100 miles, if you take your coffee in that flavor. It rates its range as 335. Now, 335 is 5 miles more than Rivian had initially announced. The EPA said the R2 battery was 88.67 usable. 88.67 is bigger than the 87.9, which again Rivian had told us. Good news on paper. It means that a vehicle that's pretty heavy and not massively aerodynamic in the R2 is still up there with Tesla Model Y performance territory. In fact, better 306 miles of range, as well as the Model Y premium dual motor. That's 327 miles of range. It's also more efficient. And so the Model Y performance needs about 5.5 more kilowatt hours to do 100 miles. Tom, I know you're a bit time limited on today's podcast, but before you go, that's a good result to get that from the EPA and you know, now in the books, now all official. That's a really good efficiency number as well. Am I reading that the right way?
I think so. For that size vehicle, you know, Rivian actually, you know, obviously put a lot of effort into efficiency, powertrain efficiency, reducing aero drag, reducing complexity in the vehicle, which made it lighter. It's the battery pack's a structural battery pack. The new Maximus motor has continuous stator windings. It reduced the amount of welds, I think, from 264 welds in the Enduro motor to like 24, which made it lighter. There's less parts in it too. I think there's like 40% less parts in the Maximus motor than the Enduro motor. So, you know, they did a lot to try to make the vehicle lighter and more efficient. And it all adds up. I mean, when you talk to engineers, you do really do deep dives into efficiency, and Lucid will talk to you about this all day. How they spend, they labor over tiny little savings, because there's no one big savings. It's a thousand things that each, you know, was a little savings, and it all adds up. I think they did a pretty good job on it. That's pretty good. I wouldn't have thought the R2, any version of it, would be more efficient than any version of the Model Y. And you know, it seems, at least the EPA docs indicate, that it is slightly more efficient than the Model Y performance.
How have they done it? Is it did they talk to you, Kyle, much about things like inverters and you know, the choice of motors, stuff like that?
I mean, I think it's too early to say if they have. So let's just run those numbers back really quick. You mentioned that it takes 5.5 kilowatt hours more per 100 miles on the Model Y.
Yes.
That would mean it, for a roughly 300-mile range vehicle, the Model Y would need a 16 kilowatt hours more energy capacity than the R2.
And the battery is
smaller.
What's the size difference? Yeah.
Yes, the Model Y is
kilowatt hours smaller.
No, it's not that much. Model Y performance 79? Has a bigger battery. No, Y performance is about 85 kilowatt hours.
Oh.
84, 85.
Oh, okay.
But it, according to the numbers, it would need a 16 kilowatt hour larger battery than the R2, but it has a smaller battery. So is it more efficient than the Model Y? There's something missing. I haven't looked at the numbers, but based off what I heard in this, it doesn't add up.
The numbers are weird. Like I was looking at, I think they break down with the MPGE, which is like easy for my caveman brain to figure out.
Calculated off of recharge energy. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
Which includes charging losses.
Because that's like 104 to 109, 104 MPGE to 109 MPGE, I think, for the two.
I do like to make a bet, but I will make a bet with someone. I'll put $1,000 on the line. Okay. You take a Model Y dual motor all wheel drive. And an R2 dual motor all wheel drive performance. Again, keep in mind there will probably be a tri motor R2 to directly compare with Model Y. That Model Y is not only going to go farther, it will be significantly more efficient. That's just my guess. It's aerodynamics. You're talking about a 5-cycle EPA test that weighs heavily low speed, maybe cold weather conditions, and just factors a small portion of highway driving, which is where range matters. So when you actually run them side by side in a highway range test, which is when people care about range, I just do not see this Rivian getting that good of efficiency.
I don't think it would be more efficient than a Model Y either. And Martin, the numbers that you talked about, correct me if I'm wrong. Did you say that it on paper it needs 5 more kilowatt hour to go 100 miles?
So yeah.
That's not possible.
Okay.
That's simply not possible because it goes, Model Y performance goes close to 4 miles per kilowatt hour. So that would be like 20 more miles, you know, it would be 20 miles deficient to the R2. That can't be.
Yeah, and this was 3.7. This was 3.77 miles per kilowatt hour. Yeah. Okay.
So this is can we look at the EPA efficiency numbers of them? This is also why we don't know if they ran them in the same cycles.
True.
All I'm thinking is Rivian, we've done stories in the past. Dominic, you and I have talked about this, where Rivian has rated their model lineup in different cycles to make the difference between them look bigger. The same product line.
Tesla did that too, though, with Model 3s in different past.
I'm not saying that this is an uncommon industry standard way to operate, but I'm just saying Rivian is not above doing that. Okay, we're pretty clear. Just like Tesla is not above rating their performance vehicles with rollout, factored in the other ones without to make that gap look bigger. Everyone does shady stuff.
But what I will say is I don't care if it's more efficient than a Model Y, personally. I think they did a good job with the efficiency. I think the numbers.
It sounds like
I mean, we'll know when we drive them, Kyle, and we do our range tests. That'll be the ultimate test. But on paper, it appears as though Rivian focused on efficiency and squeezed as much out of the pack as they can. Now let's see what it does on the road.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Tom. Based off of every number we have gotten from Marquez saying well over 5 miles per kilowatt hour or whatever it was going downhill to the EPA numbers, we are seeing that this is a very efficient vehicle for a brick-shaped vehicle. It would be astounding to be more efficient than a Model Y. I've not done the Model Y performance testing. I tested a Model Y standard range rear-wheel drive. It was more efficient than a Model 3. So that was crazy in side-by-side conditions because that had the 4DU and the Model 3 didn't have the latest drive unit. Model Y performance, certainly those wheels kill a ton, just like the R2. You know, there's going to be certain give and takes based off the performance. Regardless of the comparison, the R2 is seemingly pretty magical. It seems awesome. And I think that's going to be great because so many people are going to want to buy R2, including me, and drive them and go places and do stuff. What I worry, though, and it's too early to make any physical claims, I worry that a lot of the range estimates for R2 especially will hold up in city and urban driving, but really fall short on the highway. Whereas with some other vehicles, especially German vehicles and more recently Tesla, we've seen them get a lot closer to their EPA range numbers on the highway. I think Rivian is just trying to do whatever they can to get the highest displayed number. And we're just going to see a big deficiency in the real world. But of course, we'll test it. We'll see. We'll do it. And regardless, the numbers look really good.
So on the EPA site, they don't have Rivian on this this fueleconomy.gov, but we can see the Tesla Model Y performance all-wheel drive. 32 kilowatt hours per 100 miles. And then on the Rivian R2 performance, it's 26.52 kilowatt hours per 100 miles. So it's, but are these measuring different things? Are you saying, Kyle, before you said this is like
That's based on MPGe. That's which includes this, charging losses.
Okay, so this 32 kilowatt hours includes charging losses.
Yeah.
Okay.
26.52 does not include 20. Okay. Well, that's not helpful.
That's not. You know what is helpful? Get the cars to out of spec and state of charge, and they'll do 70 mile an hour range tests, and that will.
Metric. Range test isn't the be all end all. It's just another piece of information. I think the EPA information is useful. Take that. Absorb it. Let Kyle do a range test. Absorb it. Let me do a range test. Absorb it. Watch who's a Car and Driver or Road? Who does range? Edmonds. Watch Edmonds. Yes. Watch Edmonds, because that's and a different range test than what we do. They do a combined city. You know, just
Edmonds is a weird combined
put
one.
Put them all Car and Driver on paper.
75 miles an hour. Yeah.
Put them all on paper and then make and then get an average. There you
Here's the thing. When we do a range test, right, the goal is to try to make, in my view, this is a very political, heated topic amongst all of our reviewing community. I want the most comparable result to the rest of our numbers. I'm not saying that you will ever get 321 miles out of a car if we do, but you can look at that car and say, oh, I'm also cross-shopping the BMW i7. Mm-hmm. And so the EQS goes farther than the i7 in this one test. You cannot do that with, well, Tom's test, you can do that. The wind can blow differently on our test. You can do it. You know, there's variables, of course. The problem with the mixed cycle tests are, especially with Edmonds, they're trying to reach an average. They're trying to reach an average number. You can reach an average by driving 1 mile an hour and then, whoa, driving really fast for a little while. And that will screw everything up. And so that doesn't work, in my opinion. I love the people at Edmonds. Alistair's a friend of mine. Everyone, I love all the people over there. That I do not like their range test because it is not comparable. I also think EPA needs to be much more transparent about the actual cycles the automakers are running the vehicles through. So you can compare all the 5-cycle cars, all the 2-cycle cars, and you can do that if you dig enough on the website. Of course, the numbers are all there, but the normal consumer won't see that. So when they cross shop 2 cars, they're looking at 2 completely different test cycles and spending a lot of money on numbers that are not comparable.
Why even let the manufacturers choose which test they want to do? Just make one test, and then we don't have to worry about did it do this test or did it do that test. Just do one test, because you know the manufacturers, most manufacturers at least, run both tests, and whichever one provides the best results, that's what they certify for that vehicle. So just make one test, and then it's apples to apples in every vehicle, like what Kyle and I do with our 70-mile-an-hour high ranges. We try to do apples to apples, car to car, under dissimilar conditions. I don't like that they let them have 2 driving cycles.
Yeah, there's so many questionable decisions at EPA. Obviously, they're trying to satisfy automakers, government organizations, and consumers, and there's a lot of weights being pulled at them that we don't have to deal with. But you're totally right, Tom. We just need comparisons. There's no single range of a vehicle. If someone asks, how far does your car go? Well, it completely depends on 1 million factors and if you're towing, if what your drive cycle is, where you're going, and there is no range number. So if we can all agree that range is not a thing and it totally depends on how you use the vehicle, then we can just get to a number so you can say this one goes farther than the other, and that's the only thing you'll ever be able to prove.
I can tell you one thing, a 2022 Ford F-150 Lightning with BF Goodrich KO2 tires driving 85 miles an hour from New Jersey to Maryland will only go about 210 miles. Found that out. Yes. Yeah. I got to get my winter tires off. They're killing me. It's probably ripping me about 40 miles of range. So, my old tires are worn out. I got to buy new ones. So I got to figure out which direction. What am I going to try out? The Hankook Ions I was thinking about?
It's a sponsored thing, but Hankook Ion HTs, I have sets on both of our Rivians. Pretty amazing.
I didn't know that, but and I thought that was what I was leaning towards getting. So maybe I will get them.
Yeah. Right. Well, I've got to get an advert in for Tom. And then when we come back, we won't have Tom, but there'll be the three of us. We'll get to BMW quickly and maybe some others if we got time. Back in a moment.
The Batteries Included podcast is sponsored by EVChargingStations.com. If you drive an electric vehicle or you're planning to, this site is packed with comprehensive charger reviews, detailed DC fast charging graphs, and the latest news from all of the fast charging networks. You'll find real-world testing, easy-to-understand comparison, and deep dives into how different electric vehicles actually charge. Before you buy an EV charger or plan your next road trip, make sure to bookmark evchargingstations.com and make smarter charging decisions.
All right, welcome back. Okay, let's get into another big story this week, actually. Really interesting. Not a lot of Remats chats on the podcast lately. They've quietly been getting on and doing what they've been doing with their new investment, new ownership. But this one took us by surprise. The BMW i7 is getting a refresh, and they've turned to Remats to sort the batteries. Founder and president Matej Remats, and old CEO and CTO of Bugatti Remats as well, saying BMW has always been known for pushing engineering to the highest level, so we collaborated with them, and they're doing the high-voltage battery system for the new BMW i7, which is interesting because BMW don't seem to need outside help. I mean, the new Neue Klasse iX3 is pretty good. This uses the same Gen 6 4695 cells, but not the cell-to-pack kind of goodness. It's still made into modules, into packs. But very interesting that Remats say that they could make 300,000 modules a year. That's 50,000 battery packs, and there's not going to be that many i7s sold from BMW, but super interesting. So world premiere April 22nd at Auto China Beijing. I wonder why that is. Any kind of guesses or speculation, Kyle, or that kind of collaboration took me by surprise?
You'll have to wait until April 22nd for me to tell you anything.
Ah,
but,
you know already.
But don't get too excited. Don't get too excited. There's nothing. Right. I think I can, without breaking any agreement, it's just not. Just don't get too excited about
it. Okay, come on. Okay. All right. Cool. So that'll be interesting.
They're promising faster charging and more range.
Then the old existing
2025
i7. Right, which sucked because I drove it across the country.
Yeah, same.
And it sucked. And you drove it across the country too. And every charging session, it got slower and slower and slower and slower and slower because there was DC fast charging limits. I can't tell you anything about the new one, but I think you can imagine they solved that problem with the iX3. You can inference it, but it's always been the top in BMW, but it's seemingly not the case anymore.
They've got to have a different cooling solution for this kind of thing, because it's like six modules in this pack, right? So, but it's not sell the pack, so they're in modules, obviously. So a different cooling solution than what they use in the iX3.
I can't talk about that, but I won't.
don't get excited. All right,
I'll
get you in trouble. The i7 is a fascinating beast, and it is a beast. And I wonder how many of them are road tripped or just sit in a garage of three other cars and get used when they want to feel special or be driven in China.
It's on my short list as my next car.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Not necessarily the new one. Finding a used one. I love the i7. Dominic drove the same one I had. You just
cruise
in that thing. It's like a boat, and it's high quality, and it's got that sort of German tank vibe that I love. And I really have been doing, it's crazy to think this, but every day between going from the track to the house, to the farm, to Raleigh, back to the track, doing this whole thing, I'm driving between 200 and 275 miles a day. I have to like full charge or charge in the middle, or I switch cars. So sometimes I'll get to the track dead, switch cars into another one, and then drive that over, and then I'll leave there. And it's really frustrating. I kind of need one car I can just pile miles on. And driver assistance is hugely important for me. Of course, range and not caring about the battery, because I also don't like to full charge stuff all the time. That's another one of my problems. If I left all my cars at 100%, it would be nice, but I normally leave them at between 50 and 80. And I try to leave them less, but it's been harder. I kind of need a car to just pile miles on, and maybe it's a new Model Y. I'm actually stealing my mom's Model Y for the next few unknown period of time, because she's not going to be driving it. And I told my dad, he's like, I'd like to drive the Model S. And I'm like, well, I would like Hardware 4 in the Model Y. And they own it. They don't care about miles. Same on my Model S. So I'm actually going to switch with them this week. And I'm going to be driving my mom's new Model Y around with Hardware 4. And it'll drive me around. And I cannot wait. That's what I'm going to be using for the next bit.
Yeah.
We got FSD 14.3 just came out.
I don't know if they have it on there yet, but we will, of course, try to get it on there as soon as possible. And we have a hardware for Model 3 that I got for one of my colleagues to do FSD testing. It's still in the body shop, but I hear it'll be ready tomorrow.
Ready.
Nice.
So just i7, just real quick though, do you think these changes will can do enough to bring up some sales? I did some looking last night, and I guess it gets between 16 to 20,000 sales in 2025. Not great, you know, for a flagship car. I mean, that's split between the combustion version of the i7 and also the 8 series. Is going to be enough to bring up some sales at all, or is it just going to kind of wait until it's actually brand new platform? Because this platform that it is on now is shared with the combustion car, right? Which is kind of why it might be slightly compromised.
The conversation's too premature for the April whatever reveal towards the end of this month. But I don't think BMW would spend a lot of money upgrading a car if they didn't at least believe it would increase sales. Whether we think it will or not, my opinion differs from automakers on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So I hopefully that says enough.
And I spend so much time thinking about, especially in Europe, the lower end of the market that's exploded here. So 15 to 22 or 15 to 25 grand. There is just so many vehicles. And of course, we since Brexit, we didn't have to follow the EU in terms of China tariffs, so we don't have them here. So the UK is exploding in cheap Chinese stuff. So I don't give a lot of thought to the i7s and the EQSs of the world, and Lucids are on sale in Europe, but no one buys them. It seems such a small market, and it's where, obviously, EVs started with the Model S at that top end. That I don't give it enough thought, that I probably unfairly write off those big barges now as being, well, the car makers have got to make them, you know, and they'll sort of sideline them for a bit, but maybe they're not. We'll wait and see. But Polestar, talking of big barges, not the biggest of barges, but the biggest one Polestar make, their 3, is not going to be made in China anymore. They're only going to make it at the South Carolina plant at the Volvo plant. So that's interesting. It'll be the only Polestar built in the US. It shares its platform with the Volvo EX90, of course. Not the same vehicle, very different vehicles, but they are the same underpinnings. Helping to avoid tariffs and adding manufacturing efficiencies. Polestar obviously want to sell more vehicles. It would use CATL cells. Not sure if the politics aligns with that. They can tap into LG, apparently. And of course, this is the 800 volt architecture, Polestar 3 as well, but made in the US and no longer in China. Polestar don't, I think they closed their final showroom in China, which is fascinating.
You mentioned they want to sell more cars, but then they're shutting down a factory. They already build them here. Yeah. So how does that work?
I guess Europe gets them from you and Europe doesn't get them from China, which is crazy because they're going to be cheaper to make them in China.
But I think because the EX90, they make the Volvo EX90 in South Carolina as well. So those two vehicles have so many parts in common that I believe Polestar says it's just more efficient for them to make those two similar cars in the same place.
But they already were. Right.
Well, they're spending a bunch of money building them in China when they're not being sold in China. They're being shipped from China.
But Martin thought it was cheaper to build them in China.
It's got to be cheaper than South Carolina.
It's got to be cheaper to build them in China, but then is it cheaper to build them in China and then ship them to Europe?
If they use the CATL packs, they would be building the packs in China and shipping them to America and then shipping the vehicles to Europe, which does seem a little nuts. But we'll see.
CATL cells, they're going to build the packs in. They're going to build the packs in the US with the CATL cell. That's the plan, at least. But I don't
That's the plan.
I mean, they're going to have to pay a 25% tariff on that. The way things stand right now, it's from what I understand.
Okay.
Well, this will affect dozens of people.
Literally, several people will pay a little more for their car.
As much as I love the Polestar 3, I have been pushing for this car. Yeah. No one buys them. They have insane deals on them, and they have done zero to talk about their new model properly.
Yeah.
There are 21,000 on the hood. If you for Tesla, if you own a Tesla and you go in to buy a Polestar 3, you can get $21,000 off. But that's the 400 volt version, so it's 2025.
My colleague and friend Max, who's a contributor for Out of Spec, he used to be with us full time. He went to law school, but he still makes videos for us. He just leased one, and he's been making some videos on Out of Spec about it, and we have more coming. And it has been, he says, good from the outside looking in, a disaster. He's already had the car in for service for turtle mode issues and software bugs. His has the new NVIDIA chip. I like the car. I would actually have bought a Polestar 3 if it was the 800-volt one and all that stuff. Now, well, it's not really that competitive anymore. But I think it's such a cool car. I own a Polestar. I like it. Martin owns a Polestar. We like it. Mm. They really have a communication problem in the U.S. on how to actually communicate what the brand is, why the cars matter, and to carve out like a real sales funnel for them. I think they have a better chance with Polestar 4 because it's a bit more modern, a bit trendier, a bit more tech, not as high quality as the Polestar 3. The Polestar 3 is a tank. It's awesome. That thing drives great. But Polestar 4 is a bit trendier, and I hope they take off, but I just hear no one ever talk about them as they come up in conversation.
No one does. A new OTA for Polestar 2s. I got mine last night. Boy, did I dodge a bullet. I was out with my 8-year-old, and he loves watching YouTube while I dive into the shop to get groceries. And it came up on screen. Do you want to install the software update now? And he's just jabbing his finger like, where's my Minecraft video gone? And almost hit yes. And that's a 90-minute update that I'd have been sitting in the supermarket car park. But he didn't, luckily. But yeah, when I got home, we did it. It uses Android Automotive 13, a plug and charge. Is now part of Polestar 2 and some other things, but not materially different from my 90 minutes. Not that I waited, of course, but I got in this morning and thought, this all looks the same. I mean, the reversing camera doesn't go black sometimes, apparently, on the release notes. Let's talk a little bit before we go about flash charging. So BYD's flash charging, be careful how we talk about a lot of the China stuff because it's not really, it's interesting, but we can't use it. BYD's flash charging got a lot of the attention, but Geely challenging that now with their own flash charging. Here's the numbers, 10 to 70 in 4 minutes, 22 seconds, and 97% charge, which is as good as full, in 8 minutes and 42 seconds. I can't tell you the exact capacity kilowatt hour of that battery that they were referring to with that.
95.
Thank you, Dom. That's amazing. 5 minutes, 32 seconds, 80% charge, a 10 to 80. We always want a 10 to 80. Anything else is a fudge. 5 minutes and 32 seconds on a 10 to 80, 95 kilowatt hour pack. That'll do. That's not too bad. That was a Lincoln Co. 10, which I couldn't pick one out of a lineup, but I probably could. A Lincoln Co. 10.
It's new.
Okay, so 900 volts with the Energy Golden Brick battery, and it's a Geely V4 megawatt. Awesome.
Martin, you mentioned that you don't get to use some of the Chinese stuff. Well, my colleague William is in Paris right now, 1,500 kilowatt charging a car.
Already,
a thing with a Denza BYD situation.
Ah, so that's the GT. So I saw I got the email in my inbox to say the GT Denza GT is now launched. So that must be the event he's at then.
Yeah, that's he's insane. At the launch. He's doing automatic drifting with it on a racetrack and charging it really fast. And I'm like, why are we missing out on all the cool stuff?
That's amazing. They do, and I saw the amount of charges they want to put into the UK, and I forget the number, but even if they hit a fraction of it, it's going to be incredible.
A buddy of mine from who used to work at ABB Charging now works at BYD Charging, and he's like, just watch out. It's coming.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I'm like, whoa, that's awesome.
Well, they have huge experience. They've built, BYD has built 5,000 of these, of their new gen flash chargers already installed in China. They're going for 20,000 in China this year of these flash charger, you know.
I didn't know it was that many. That's crazy.
Yeah, like that'd be, I believe that's many bays. There's not that many, you know, stations, but I assume they're talking about bays here because that's a lot, right? Mm. So Geely's got this, their own fast charger. It's only 1.2 megawatts, I think. It's a little bit different. But it sounds like it's just can charge just as fast. So I don't know if you're, when you get this number is this high, I'm not sure, you know, if there's a whole lot of difference time wise and waiting for a car to charge on a 1.2 as opposed to a 1.5 megawatt. I think it depends on the curve of the car's battery as much as anything else, right?
It's all arriving at the right time, though, if that makes sense. This is the year of talking about fast charging. So most people will never do it. Everyone should really be charging destination or at home, but when you need it, you want it. And this is the year of it. It's arriving at an absolute perfect time for people to understand it. And then there's the wider situation, which I don't know how you guys feel. I'm getting a feeling this is overblown. I'm seeing daily articles now saying gas prices are up. US average price is over $4 now. It's $4.16, I think. But yeah, it's also spring break time and gas prices always rise now. But obviously the conflict is causing prices to rise and the average is diesel is like $5.30. Every day I'm seeing articles, people are going to go buy an EV now because gas is too expensive. I'm not convinced. I don't think it plays out in the short term like that. I'm not sure you make a decision like that. Like, whoa, look at gas prices. I'm buying an EV. Maybe it's a drip, but I think, I don't know, maybe people need clicks for their websites. I'm not sure.
It seems to be really market dependent. So I looked at this the last few days. I was like kind of digging into this a bit. So the UK, Australia, and New Zealand in March have are over 100% year over year in the percentage of new cars sold that are electric. So in New Zealand, it's 278%, I believe, March over March, in the increase. So there's just like a handful of countries, markets where charging is like over 100% doubled in the month of March, year over year.
You mean new cars sold, right? Electric?
So what percentage of cars
aren't
sold?
Those markets that just got access to Chinese cars?
Yes.
Not all. I mean,
Australia, New Zealand, and the UK. Yeah.
Italy.
There are so many. The number one selling car in the UK is the JQ7.
Electric. That's a plug-in hybrid.
Yeah, with their super hybrid system, as they market it. Super. It'll hold the charge, or it'll use the engine to charge the battery. I'm like, how is this? Anyway, it's not that super. It's just a hybrid system, but it's like more than the Ford Puma, which is always the best-selling car, or has been lately. And so it's just, I know I hate sample sizes of one, but I'll do it. I'm personally seeing tons of Chinese cars. I'm also seeing tons of the new Model Y, by the way. I just keep seeing them where I live anyway. But there's so many of these cheap Chinese cars, of the BYDs and JQs and Omodas. Maybe I'm looking out for them, but anyway.
Are you seeing the JQ J5?
No.
Okay. Or J6? It's like the GP-looking one?
No. Haven't seen many of those. But the Omoda, the Omoda 5, tons of those. Some of them are pure BEV, some of them plug-in hybrid. But yes, this is the year of Chinese EVs in Australia, New Zealand, and the UK.
But Australia... The prices seem to affect the mindset of people. I have a friend of mine who runs a roofing company who owns a few EVs. And one of his employees, who just so happens to also manage the out-of-spec branch, the farm version that Scott runs, because of the Dave connection, it all worked out. Where basically the guy who lives at our farm and manages it is also my buddy Dave's employee. That's how we met him. He's spending $500 a week driving his Silverado 2500 diesel from the farm to the roofing company office. So actually, I just had the guys pull up my Gen 2 RAV4 EV that's been sitting in the back. It has 100-mile range. I don't know. But it's only 30 miles one way. And I'm putting charging in at the farm tomorrow. And he's got charging already at the office. And so we are going to take that $500 and basically turn it to zero, because now he doesn't have to pay for fuel. And it's sort of as like a thanks for managing the farm and doing the roofing company. So he's going to be driving my RAV4 EV around. And so that it is kind of happening.
Yeah, I think what it does is it makes people think about energy. When if you drive when you drive a petrol or diesel, you don't think about energy. You think about miles traveled and dollars, right? Whereas when there is either the 1970s fuel crisis or the Ukraine invasion 2022 and now, and prices go up, I think people then draw the line between energy and travel, which they don't, which you obviously do with an EV because it's literally on the dashboard counting down every mile you drive, and because you're used to paying for energy for your house, and now you're so there's a much clearer line, a really thick line between them, and everyone gets it. So I think that's what it does. It makes people think, oh wow, like that's costing me a lot more, so maybe I'll think about it. But yeah, the market moves have been huge in March. But that's too soon. It's like we're 6 weeks into a conflict. It's too soon.
I think,
But it was the best ever UK sales record last month in March. 86,000 pure BEVs sold in March here. The highest month on record ever. So it's 20. We are a 22% BEV last month, I think, which is not a bad number. Right, before we go, the buzz is not going. According to Volkswagen of America, they have taken a pause for the cause on the model year 26. They made a strategic decision not to move forward, they say, with model year 26 ID Buzz for the US, which people assumed was the ID Buzz is being pulled out of the market. But VW say it's a pause, not the eject button. So they say the ID Buzz isn't cancelled. It's just skipping a model year. You can still find some old ones, I'm sure, on dealer lots. And the new one arrives in the fall. And how many were sold? ID Buzz sales were almost 61,000 last year, but 7,000 of those in the US. So as Kyle said earlier, literally several people will be affected by this news.
I know we've all got to go, and I especially have to go, but I just have some news that I didn't get a chance to share yet. Today, I went to a local resident of our region who were longtime EV enthusiasts, and I picked up two more RAV4 EVs, first generation.
No.
Yeah, but they had so many cool things. They had a 1970s electric garden tractor that I drove around. It's on my X page if you want to pull it up really quick. And Wes is driving it there. Everything in his entire life was Nissan Leaf cell powered. So it's a really interesting use case for second life batteries. He had utility carts, lawn mowers, literally anything you can think of, electric go-kart. That's like a fun little rip around go-kart, all second life out of used Nissan Leaf packs stacked together. Completely not the best wiring job on the planet. And there's just cells everywhere. So they needed to recycle a ton of nickel metal hydride cells. So I picked up and loaded the back of my diesel pickup truck completely full of them and put them on a pallet and just forklifted it off. But check this thing out. There's a 1970s electric garden tractor. It was basically a GE Electrek back in the day. This one's a new idea version. Same thing.
Nice.
The tractor, and it's just still running today. They still use it out there on their property, and like electric tools, vehicles can last a long time. And I just love to see this stuff. I thought everyone would enjoy going away with some positivity.
I'm convinced that this is such gold for people, because if on my YouTube homepage, I've got, I just bought a new Bugatti or something from some car influencer, and then you put a video out being like, I drove a 1970s tractor with Nissan Leaf batteries. I'm like, I'm watching this one first. I think people love stuff like this.
It was really cool, and we're going to have Alex is moving here literally right now. He's in the car driving here, who runs our Out of Spec Renew channel. He is obsessed with these. I called my buddy Robert Dunn, who runs Aging Wheels. I'm like, I'm sitting on one of your favorite tractors. He owns one of these as well.
He owns one.
No way. And I don't know what I can say, but he was broken down in a very weird electric car on the side of the highway when I called him, and there he's filming a video about it.
It broke down. Oh, yes, right. Yeah, I can't wait. He's going to announce that pretty soon. Our friend Robert Aging Wheels has got a great new vehicle to show everybody.
I'm not
going to
blow up his spot, but he was broken down in it. And I'm like, what are the chances I'm calling you on this and you're driving that? It was so funny. It was just great.
So were these old Leaf batteries, were they buying cars and disassembling them? Were they just getting stuff off eBay? Where did they come from?
Yeah, just online, local Craigslist. They were older folks, so they would just do little area stuff, and they were doing so many EV things. Oh, this is interesting. You see that battery tray that's behind the RAV4?
Yeah.
Like this red thing. That is an official Ford sold to dealerships to install and dismantle Ranger electric battery packs that's specifically made for the Ranger EV battery. I own one, and I just got a new battery tray for it. So now I can put it in and take it out with the official tool, which is so cool.
That's you got amazing. A battery tray?
What was that, Dom?
You got a battery tray for a 1998 Nissan or Ford Ranger?
Yes. Alex found it in Oregon. It's in his shipping container that's being moved out here.
Wow. Amazing.
So much good stuff to watch. We can't wait. Thank you very much for listening and watching, as always, to the podcast. It helps us if you hit the thumbs up or the like button on this, especially on YouTube, because it then recommends us to other people like you, like us, who are into all of this kind of crazy stuff that we talk about every single week here and on our own channels as well. And of course, subscribe if you are not already. You can find us on socials over the next 7 days before we are back here. Leave a comment below. We absolutely love reading those and taking part in the comment section as well. Thank you all so much for joining us, and we'll see you again very soon. Hey, Dom, say ciao.
Ciao.
Mega.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.